Well, good morning, everybody. This is Bob Elson. We're set as usual with our Sunday morning show, and we're going to talk football today because in spite of the fact that baseball is in its closing phases now, everything is just about settled except the Yankee-Boston situation where the Yankees have a one-game lead with two games left to play. I like to see the Yankees win because I've always been fond of Bob Lemon. And Lemon has done a tremendous job with the Yankees since he got there. He was such a great change of pace from the Billy Martin that it really helped to settle the Yankees down, and they have a terrific ball club. Anyway, we'll have a pretty good idea today just what's going to happen. All the other races actually are over with the exception of Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. That, too, is in its closing stages. There's a lot of baseball and there's a lot of football today. The Bears games gets underway at 3 o'clock, and as you know, they're playing Oakland. On the tube today also will be the Green Bay-Detroit game, and those are the two games that you'll be able to see in Chicago. When the Bears are on the tube, or when the Bears are at home, they eliminate the usual. We get two games at noon and two games at 3 o'clock, but with the Bears playing at home, they eliminate those other two games. But the Bear game should be a terrific game today, and let's hope the Bears can put things together. We're going to talk football today with an All-American from Notre Dame, Johnny Latner. Johnny was really a great, great football player with the Fighting Irish, and he played for one of their great coaches, Frank Leahy. And we have many, many things to talk about with Johnny, and he'll be with us in just about 1 minute. We're delighted to have an old friend, Johnny Latner, as our guest today. He was a great football player, an All-American at Notre Dame. And although you don't hear much about it, he was also a pro for a year with the Pittsburgh Steelers. And the oddity about that situation is that the general manager of the Bears was the quarterback with Pittsburgh. How good was he?
Bob, Jimmy Finks was, I'll tell you the truth. In 52, before I got there, in 53, before I got there, he led the NFL over Otto Graham in pass completions, and that's how good he was. And Jimmy was a unique quarterback. He didn't have a great deal of size, but he had the ability not only to throw a real long ball, but he could throw a sharp fastball. So he had the distinction of being able to throw the long one and being able to hit those quick lookouts and look-ins, as we would call them.
Why did you retire from the pro game so quickly?
Well, Bob, in 54, after the season, I played in the all-pro game out in Los Angeles, but I had 2 years to put in with the Air Force. And when I was in the Air Force, I was stationed at Bowling Air Force Base playing service ball, and I tore up my knee. Oh. I went back with the Steelers in 57 and gave it a try, but I was a half a step slower than I was before I started, and I was never known to have a lot of speed. And I decided I better call it quits before I got something else hurt.
You know, when you talk about Notre Dame and coaching, you played for a fellow who probably rates with a lot of people as number one, maybe even over Rockne. But the three great coaches down there, probably in that order, were Rockne and then Leahy and then Era Parsegian. What about their different philosophies toward the game? What do you recall about those three?
Well, naturally, I don't remember Knute Rockne. He was a little bit before my time. But, you know, just taking all three of them together as great coaches and looking at how they did things, first of all three of them were perfectionists. I don't think any of them deviated too far off of the fact that you still have to block and you still have to tackle. You still have to perfect what you're doing. And Parsegian was like that. I know Knute Rockne, and just looking at his record and looking at and talking to some of the old timers, that the name of the game then was blocking and tackling and doing the job to perfection and now not allowing a lot of mistakes, to cut down your mistakes. So I really basically, Bob, their philosophies were all alike. Eliminate mistakes, do what you're doing, do it to perfection. And that was Parsegian's philosophy. He wasn't that tricky. One thing about Era, and I think about Leahy, and even about Rack, they had the ability in their mind to change too, to change the formations, to change according to what talent they had. But even though they might have changed, they were able to really perfect that change. Leahy changed from the straight tee to the split tee. Era changed from the tee to the wing tee. Era used it, but when he did it with perfection.
I wondered what happened to the box formation or the tee with the shift that Rockne used. Why don't we ever see that anymore?
Well, that's commonly known as the Notre Dame box, the shift to the right and left. In fact, we used it at Fenwick High School. When I was at Fenwick, Tony Lawless thought it was great and won a lot of games with it. Well, the only thing you probably have that is difficult to operate is that you have to center that ball back on every play. And if you put a man over the center, the way these football players are built today and with speed and aggressive enough they have, you'd have to have a superhuman center to be able to get that ball back to the tailback. You know, if you look at some of the offenses today, it's almost like a single wing. You take your veer formation, you got your tailback back to 7 yards. And that's basically how the single wing was. You were back where you could see a hole opening. And that's what the wishbone basically is, not like that, but the veer formation is, and some of your eye formation type of offenses where the back has a chance to take off for different places. Uh-huh. And really, it looks like a single wing.
I can remember the many times that Notre Dame would get inside the opponent's 10-yard line and have a first down, and they'd shift, and the other side would jump offside right away, and they'd be inside the 5-yard line. First down.
Bob, I was on those teams. When we were down there in 52 and 53, we had the split tee. And all the split tee was is linemen firing out, hitting those defensive men on hike. Well, you get down to the 10 yards, the last 10 yards are the hardest in any football field. I don't care which football field you're playing in. And if you can get 5 yards easy, and that's all he was trying to do is get 5 easy yards to draw the other team offside. And if your backs are firing and all of a sudden your linemen step up and go out and your backs shift, you're going to get somebody offside.
You know, I have the pleasure of knowing Rockne well and knowing Leahy well too. And they really were different types. One thing about Rockne, he worked for the Studebaker Automobile Company. And when he talked to Studebaker salesmen, they practically get up and run out of the room. I mean, this guy was such a tremendous salesman. Now, Leahy always seemed to me, well, he was such a quiet, refined type. What kind of a guy was he?
Well, he was a salesman. I think every great coach has to be a salesman to put across his ideas and his enthusiasm, his determination to the ballplayers. And Coach Leahy many times said, John Ladner, what you did out there on that field against the enemy, you'll burn in hell for it. And I was scared.
Well, last year, in spite of Notre Dame's success, there was a feeling and there was an undercurrent about the present coach, Devine. Now they've gotten off to a very bad start. Is that apparent again? Is there a feeling again that Devine is out of place at Notre Dame?
One of the hardest things to do at Notre Dame is to satisfy everybody. First of all, you have the Notre Dame graduates who want to win. And second of all, and probably the most of all, you have the Subway alumnus. These are guys that never went to Notre Dame, and they want to see Notre Dame win. And some of them have as much influence over who's coaching at Notre Dame and who isn't. Poor Dan is really, he gets his lumps every year. Last year, the same thing. He started off with Pittsburgh, won a close one, lost to Mississippi, came back, and won them all. You know what? I don't know. I hope lightning strikes twice, because now he's 0-2. If he wins the rest of his games and ends up playing Southern Cal at the end of the season, the last game of the season, and if he beats Southern Cal, they'll still put Devine up there near heaven. You know, I hope he can do it. He's got a tough road to cross. I really, personally, Montana's a great quarterback. I think he needs a little change in there. There's a kid down there who's a sophomore, kid from Cincinnati, that I'd like to see him do. Just like last year, Montana came in there, he changed the whole course. Well, let's try Cagle this time and see if he can do the job. He's only a sophomore. He's supposed to be a great quarterback. I hope Dan does something like this, does some change. He did it last year. He changed the uniforms. He used a little maxi. Maybe he'll do that today, next week. We don't know, but I hope he does it. You know.
Were you disappointed in the outcome of the Notre Dame-Michigan game?
Oh, naturally I am. I always want to see Notre Dame win the big ones. But Michigan was, they're a top team. Notre Dame looked pretty good the first half, and I think their turnovers, which, listen, when you have five turnovers in one half, and you're giving the ball to a good team like Michigan, you're going to lose, unless there's a miracle that happens on the field. And I think possibly those turnovers hurt them. I think they didn't look as aggressive the second half as they did the first half, and maybe Dan will be able to straighten that out. I hope so.
Yes, they played an entirely different type of game in the second half. Montana was passing on first downs in the first half and got away with it.
Well, you know, that's the name of the game. You have to throw that surprise at the defense, and if it works, it's fine, and it should work. Montana's a good quarterback. But all I'm thinking about, Bob, is that I think you have to get a little change in there to change the dundrums, you might say. Change just the gears a little bit to excite the ball players a little bit more and give them something else to go for. I just hope Dan will try that. I really do.
With Notre Dame people, there's been a living legend, the legend of George Gipp. What about Gipp? How great was Gipp? You must have looked into his background.
Well, Gipp was an all-around ball player. He was the original triple threat. He could throw the ball, he could punt, he could run. He's a hell of a pole player, a great card player. I mean, he was a personality type of guy. But, you know, he was the bread and butter ball player. You know, if you wanted 5 yards or if you wanted 50 yards, he was charmed with the ability to do the things that he wasn't supposed to be able to do, and he could do them with perfection. He was a great one in his era, and he probably would be a great one now under the same coaching techniques and the high school coaching and the grammar school coaching. He would have been a great one. He had the size. He was about 6'2 and a half. He was about 195, and that was a big back.
Johnny, as you probably heard the story that they credit Gus DeRay and Newt Rockne with the forward pass because they used it surprisingly against Army. But the forward pass had been used before that, hadn't it?
Oh, sure. The forward pass was used right after the turn of the century. Now, we're going back to the 1900, and it was Amos Stadick had it, Yost had it. These are all coaches older than Rockne that had it in the early 1900s, but they didn't perfect it. Here's what Rockne and DeRay did. They went up and played the Army Academy, number one powerhouse in the East. Notre Dame was nothing. Notre Dame was just a Midwest school for poor boys that didn't have any money and not too much brains. They played the Army Academy, who had great potential of being, you know, the national champs. They beat him on the pass. They glorified the pass. They glamorized it. They made it a threat. The newspapers picked it up. The Fighting Irish, they could throw, boom, boom, boom. And really, they just brought it to front.
When you were playing at Notre Dame in those 3 years that you played, who was your favorite opponent?
Our favorite opponent always was Michigan State, and they always beat us. But because they always beat us, I guess we wanted to beat them, you know, as bad as they beat us, let's put it that way. My junior year, my sophomore year, we lost 35-0 to Michigan State. My junior year, we had beaten Oklahoma with Billy Vessels and Buck McPhail. They were a great team. The next week, we played Michigan State. We had them beat 3-0. And what happened? Same thing that Notre Dame happened to Michigan. We started fumbling, and we turned the ball over, and they beat us 20-3.
Whatever happened to the Notre Dame-Michigan State series?
Well, it's back. They're playing Michigan State in a couple weeks, I believe. And I think the question is, how good is Michigan State? How good is Notre Dame? Those were great series when Biggie Munn was coaching and Duffy Doherty. Well, Duffy himself would, you know, make the game important. He just loved to play Notre Dame and beat them.
You know, when you talk about the University of Illinois and Bob Zupke, who was a wonderful man and a great coach, he was responsible, they say, for that flea flicker play. And I was surprised watching Pittsburgh last week when that game went into overtime. Up comes the flea flicker, and they score the winning touchdown.
You know, Bob, that always amazes me, you know, and particularly when the game is going into the last few seconds, how a team can score a 40-yard touchdown pass or a 50-yard touchdown pass, and the flea flicker is nothing. It's, you know, it's going to it developed into a pass play, and you know it is. And all your defensive backs have to do is get back in their zone, yeah, and play the ball. But see, I think in pro ball today, particularly, you got so much man-to-man defense, pass defense, that these guys are just prone for man-to-man defense, and one step and the guy's gone. And that's what happened. Just give him, the timing was perfect. The guy got behind the defender, and boom, it's a touchdown. Can't get over it.
We're talking football today with a former Notre Dame All-American, Johnny Lattner, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. We're talking football today with an old friend, Johnny Lattner, a Notre Dame All-American. By the way, Johnny, next week, you know, Dr. Ted Fox, a well-known orthopedic surgeon here in Chicago, been a good friend of mine for many years. He's been in the pro game for, oh, I guess he was the Bears some 25 or 30 years. A very, very interesting man. And there's so much talk today about football injuries, about helmets, about face guards and things like that, that there are many things that I'm anxious to talk to him about.
Well, Bab, it has to be very interesting because I personally feel today, if they took away the nose guards, for instance, you would eliminate a lot of neck injuries, a lot of nerve injuries. You know what? With that nose guard, the way it is now, it's a lethal weapon. First of all, you can spear, tackle, and you know, you're going into the kidneys, you're going into the ribs, and particularly if you're blocking. Say you're black and that nose guard is sticking out. You can hit that nose guard and rip a guy's neck back so fast that, it's a dangerous weapon. Now, I will venture to say, eliminating the nose guard is going to change the whole game of football all over again, where guys are going to have to learn how to block with their shoulders, and where they're going to have to keep their heads up and learn how to slide their heads back and forth when they block and tackle. And it might slow the game down a little bit, but I also feel that you're going to see a lot more finer runs, and you're going to see the real true meaning of a block and a tackle, where it takes true guts to put your face into a guy who is running.
John, are you distinguishing the nose guard from the face mask?
Well, there is a difference. The face mask is bigger than a nose guard. Years ago, we would call a nose guard, or a face mask, a nose guard. Nobody wore a nose guard when I played. The only reason why you wore it if you had a broken nose. Today, they have the face mask with all the bars coming across. We never played with them. You know what? I still have all my teeth. I have never had my nose broken. I've had a lot of scrapes, and I have a lot of bruises. But fortunately, I never, and you go back, and I don't, you know, I really would love to have somebody take statistics of guys that lost their teeth, guys that had their necks broken, guys that had their nose broken when they didn't have the nose guard or face mask, whatever you want to call it.
In one case, there's been a lot of changes in the helmet since you were playing at Notre Dame.
The helmet has changed drastically. Today, you got the air cushion helmet. You got the water cushion helmet. When I was playing at Notre Dame, we had a leather helmet. And there's another point that I'd like to bring out. In those days, the popular helmet was the plastic helmet with the expansion type of wiring inside, so it would absorb the impact. When I was down there, Leahy went to the leather helmet. We had one concussion in 3 years, and all we had is the leather helmet. It absorbed the impact a heck of a lot more, I thought, than the shell type of plastic helmet that they were using.
You hear so much about injuries today, especially in the pro game, not so much in the colleges.
Well, the pro game, you know what, Bob, and it was injuries when I was playing. You know, you're running, you're facing bigger people, you're facing smarter people, you're facing fast. The whole aspect of pro ball is violence. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. When you're in there, you want to win. You know, you want that payoff. And if you can slow the other guy down a little bit, that's going to help your team to a victory. And it's a money game, and you can't blame them. I remember when I played for the Steelers, a good linebacker, a friend of mine that I played at Notre Dame, I was falling down. We were playing against the 49ers, and I was tripping, and he was a linebacker. He came by me, and I just felt his elbow go by my nose, and he fell in front of me, and I said, "Hey, Bob, what are you doing?" He says, "Jan, you're in pro ball now. If I can get you out of the game, you know, we'll eliminate one of the threats." And I said, "Oh, my goodness." That was my first big reaction to pro ball.
And you know, when you talk about pro football, they probably have the most efficient, the best operator of a game that there is, Pete Rozelle. Don't you agree?
I agree. And they do a good job of governing, of taking care of showing the pitchers, reviewing the pitchers with the officials, reviewing the pitchers of all the games with the NFL hierarchy. And sure, they want to put on a good show. I don't think they really want to hurt people. I mean,
no, I'm sure they don't. They're not in favor of dirty football.
No. But you know what? Football's an aggressive sport. You know, you can't take that aggressiveness away from people. You know, you get in there and some guy knocks you on your butt, you're going to get back. And if you have any red-blooded American blood cells in you, you want to get back there and you want to knock him on his butt. I mean, that's the name of the game. And you can't take that out of American football. It's aggressive. It's vicious. It's as vicious in high school and grammar school as it is in pro.
They say that Notre Dame is fortunate because of their great football reputation, that they attract Catholic high school boys from practically every state in the union. And that's, I believe there's something to that. After all, they, Rockne and your man Leahy and Persegian have been legends down there, and some people say, well, Notre Dame's a football factory. I don't believe in that at all, because I do happen to know that scholastically, boy, they are plenty tough at Notre Dame. If you can't meet the books, you aren't going to be out there playing football.
Well, Bob, that's very true. When I was down there, and I think the standards are the same now as they were when I was playing, we had to maintain, this seems kind of a 77 average throughout our 4 years at Notre Dame. And once our average went below 77, we were eliminated from any intercollegiate sports. And it was tough. It was real tough. You had to, well, if you needed a help, they'd help you. You know, they'd get you a person who had the knowledge, and they would go over it with you, and they would help you. They gave you tutors when you were a freshman and sophomore. And by your sophomore year, if you didn't know what you were doing, you weren't going to stay around. You had to catch on within your first 2 years, and they did help you. They gave tutors like all other schools give you tutors, and just to teach you how to study and tell you what to study and where to study.
What did they do in the way of scholarships, athletic scholarships in those days as compared to today?
Well, I don't think they changed too much. I know when I was down there, I got my room, board, and tuition, and I got $15 a semester for dry cleaning. We didn't go out too much, so the $15 lasted us for at least 4 months.
you went there on of course, you had a great high school record.
Well, yeah, I went to Fenwick, and we were Catholic champs 2 years in a row. And when I, my last semester at Fenwick, I had about 90 scholarships to various schools throughout the country. And I guess because I was a West Side Chicago boy, and there was a lot of West Side Irishmen out there, and Polish people and German people that loved Notre Dame, and they used to come over and talk to my mother and my father, wanting me as a young lad to go to Notre Dame. I guess that all was a build-up to me going to Notre Dame, and I loved it. I'd do it again 101,000 times. I thought Notre Dame was a great school.
If you had gone to a Big Ten school, what school would it have been?
Probably Michigan. That was the only other school I was considering, was Michigan. And at a time there around May, I was very seriously thinking about going to Michigan. But I did decide on Notre Dame, and every minute I spent down there, I was scared and sometimes lonely. And unfortunately, my freshman year down in Notre Dame, my dad died, and I think that was almost set me back. I was ready to quit at that particular time because he was a great follower, and he enjoyed seeing me perform, and I enjoyed performing for him. But thank God the Padres kept me in line, and a few pairs helped out, and I stayed down in Notre Dame.
Well, you certainly made a great record. Our guest today, and we're talking football with Johnny Lattner, Notre Dame All-American, and we'll be back with our guest in just a moment. Our guest today is Johnny Lattner, former Notre Dame at All-American. How are your boys doing, by the way, there at your old school, Fenway?
Yeah, I'm a traditionalist, Bob. I live out in Oak Park, and my oldest boy is a junior at Fenwick, and then I have a sophomore at Fenwick, and I have a freshman at Fenwick. And I guess you might say, well, are they out for sports? Yeah, they're out for sports, and I hope they do enjoy it. Not that it's the biggest thing in my life that they're out for sports. I'll be very frank with that. I enjoy watching them play. In fact, today coming over here, I enjoy it. I think it's great for them. I think sports for kids, even if they never go on to play other than just be on a team, it teaches them a little comradeship with their fellow students. It teaches them a little desire. It teaches them to give up a lot of things.
And a little discipline.
A little discipline. It helps. And I got a fourth boy who's in seventh grade in grammar school, and he still hasn't come around yet. But one of these days, you never know.
Are the boys thinking about Notre Dame already?
No, I just think they're thinking about going to some school. They'd be happy to get, you know, anywhere. Today it's a lot different than when I was playing. They would just love to go to college somewhere. And if daddy can afford it, they'll be going. And if their grades are...
Are you a Bear fan? I suppose you are.
Oh, yeah, I go out to Bear. I was out last Monday to the Bears game. I saw the Minnesota game, and the Bears got a good defense. I was kind of impressed with their defense. That was the first game I really did see this year. I think their offense is going to open up. It really has to. With a guy like Walter Payton, he's the greatest back I've ever seen. He can block, tackle, or if he had to play defense, he could tackle. He can run. They're going to open up some big gainers for Walter. No doubt.
You think Avellini can get the job done?
Well, I hope he can see long, and maybe needs glasses. I saw last Monday, though, he missed Richards a couple times in the end zone. You know, I know it's pressure, you know, and he's got some guys coming in on him. But I did see Richards open about twice, at least twice, where all he had to do is hang the ball up there in the end zone, and it would have been a touchdown. And that will come. You know, Avellini's only, what, third year, maybe fourth year here? And Richards' is first year here. They're going to come around.
John, thanks so much for these reminiscences. It's a great pleasure, as always, to see you and talk football with you. And you've been a great credit to the game and to Notre Dame and to your family. I wish you all the best.
Thanks, Bob. It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Thank you. Our guest today, Johnny Lattner, former Notre Dame All-American. Next week, we hope to be talking about football injuries with Dr. Ted Fox. For years, the medical man with the Chicago Bears, he's had a great history in pro football. Anyway, whatever you're doing, a lot of football, a lot of baseball on the air today. Have a happy day. And now this is Bob Elson saying goodbye until next Sunday at our usual time.